Hi, everyone. Welcome to this energy industry conversation presented by the team at EE Energy Consulting. Today's episode is called Pushing the Limits with Electric Vehicles. In today's episode, we will highlight where things are at with respect to the electric vehicle industry, the role that electric vehicles are playing in supporting the broader decarbonization of the electric power industry, and how traditional motorsport racing is actually crossing over into electric vehicles and changing the nature of racing and helping for the greater good of our planet as a whole.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sheila Mann. I'm an electrical engineer and technical director with GE Energy Consulting. We're a consulting business within GE that works with clients across the industry, both within GE and outside of GE with a lot of our customers. Really, my job is to help those customers figure out how to use less and less carbon in their electricity grids.
And I'm Danielle Merfeld. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at GE Renewable Energy. And I work with our teams around the world to drive down the cost of renewable energy through innovations in wind and hydro and hybrid energy systems.
So the idea around this podcast is that essentially at GE, we're having conversations kind of like what you're going to hear today every day. Because really our job is to try to bring together all those different parts of the system to help drive decarbonization. So learning about new technologies to potentially invest in or partner in, new business models. We thought it would be really cool to basically share these conversations with you through a podcast series and hopefully create an even bigger opportunity to learn from each other. Obviously, we're going to learn from our guests today, but hopefully we can learn from you as well through the comments that you share and the conversations that hopefully come after this episode. So today's episode will focus on innovations in the electric vehicle space or EV space and how our guests are really pushing the limits. And you'll see that they're not just pushing the limits with respect to the vehicle itself, but they're really pushing the limits with respect to the whole system around it, which is one of the things I really appreciate about our guest today. I really take a systems approach in my work at Energy Consulting. Before we introduce our guest, I really wanted to maybe share some interesting back of the envelope stats with you to highlight one of the top reasons why the team that I work on is interested in the EV space. So did you know that if you plug an electric vehicle into a coal-based electricity grid, the carbon emissions would be almost the same as if you burned gasoline? I didn't really know that, but you know, it's true. And the good news is that most of our grids are not 100% coal. In the US, there's a lot of renewables and a lot of natural gas. So plugging that EV into our grid in the US and many grids around the world is actually less carbon intensive than burning gasoline. But in our work at GE, we want to try to ensure that when you plug those EVs in, we're using less and less carbon as possible. So hopefully carbon-free. The other reason why we think electric vehicles are very interesting is that as we bring more wind and solar energy onto the system, which are variable resources, electric vehicles, given that they have batteries in them, really offer another form of flexibility to help manage that system. So the batteries in those cars could actually help store the energy from the wind and the sun for later use. So Danielle is in a different GE business from mine and brings her own perspective. Danielle, maybe you can share, you know, your interest in today's episode, given your role.
Yeah, Sheila. So I think, you know, certainly everything you said about the system view is something we care about a lot. I'll pivot a minute and just say I'm excited to hear about this topic today because I have a feeling we're going to learn a lot more about the importance of the entire ecosystem, not just the technical components and the physical embodiment. I'm really hoping to learn about what this transformation is going to require. You know, we connect to this every day. there's probably some similarities to the space that you and I live in power generation and transmission and distribution, because economics are a big driver in both. But what about emotion? I mean, I love my car. This is going to have a different element. And then what about partnerships? What about the future state here could really surprise us, that we who aren't in this space of EVs could really learn. So let's get started. This will be fun. So as we said, Sheila and I are joined by two guests who bring with them incredible insight, a very unique approach to their work in arenas around electric vehicles that we're going to dive into. So first, let me introduce Henrik Fisker. He's known for having designed probably some of the world's most memorable sports cars in the world, including the BMW Z8, which is the best Bond car in my mind, and the world's first premium plug-in hybrid, the 2008 Karma. And I have to say, just as an aside, I saw this car, our CTO of our business drove this, and it took my breath away. It was exciting, really amazing car. Since then, Henrik's created cutting edge designs from everything from yachts to commuter shuttles and now SUVs, which we're going to hear hopefully a lot more about. His boldest venture is probably this last one, launching referred to as the world's most sustainable vehicle from the world's first all digital car company. So Henrik, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Absolutely. I'm very excited about our discussion coming up.
And our second guest is Alejandro Agag. He didn't start off in the electric vehicle or automotive space at all, but actually started off in politics in Spain and was elected to be a member of the European Parliament all while he was in his 20s, which is amazing. And he eventually made his way into the whole world of motorsport and decided to start his own electric vehicle car racing series called Formula E, which essentially is the sister version or the all-electric version of Formula One. But that wasn't enough, and he went on to launch his latest venture, which he'll share with you today, which is called Extreme E, which is a racing series that kicks off in 2021. And is not just about the electric vehicle and racing, but is also about drawing awareness to the destruction caused by climate change. And the series is going to visit some amazing places around the world. And in a way, they're almost heartbreaking, places like Nepal and Greenland. So Alejandro, I feel like I'm almost not cool enough to be talking with you today, but I appreciate you joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and looking forward to the discussion. Thanks for the introduction.
So Sheila and I just introduced both of you by way of your past and what kind of excited us to have you join us. And maybe a way to kick off the conversation today is to hear each of you give maybe some of your insights about your present and even your future, given that you're on the cusp of some really big change. So Henrik, maybe you can kick it off just by telling us about your mission at Fisker. What drives you to continue to push the limits and what you're ultimately trying to accomplish there?
Well, you know, our vision is a clean future for all. And our mission is to make the world's most emotional and sustainable vehicles. And, you know, the way I look at it is that unless we really do something in the world, and we meaning everybody who's creating something, should contribute. And that kind of means all of us, because everybody is doing something during a daily life. And whether it's throwing out, you know, your garbage, or whether it's, you know, going to work and doing something, we can all contribute. And what we want to do is we want to really take the lead in creating vehicles which are more sustainable and getting people into those vehicles. And, you know, history has shown that unless you create some exciting products that are better than the old ones, nobody's going to buy them. So our aim is to create some truly exciting vehicles, but also going one step further than simply, making an electric vehicle and saying that's it. We're also looking at how can we make the vehicle itself more sustainable. So we're using and experimenting with a lot of recycled materials. And then when we look at the entire ecosystem, like you talked about, we're even thinking of an idea where we actually don't sell the vehicle. We keep them all the way to end of life so we can recycle them. And we actually have created a flexible lease, which we're going to try out, where you can lease the vehicle and give it back anytime. And we give it back, we fix up the vehicle and send it back out for a slightly lower price to lease it. And it's turned out to be a terrific business model for us, because we get a recurring revenue on that asset, and we don't have to sell it after 3 years and wonder about the resale value, etc. So that's another aspect. And finally, we looked at the entire automotive business and thought about if there's a way to utilize existing assets instead of keeping building new factories, etc., So our first vehicle will be outsourced to a contract manufacturer because there's plenty of capacity in the world today for manufacturing. So we didn't feel we need to build a new manufacturing plant. So that was an important point as well. So we are really looking at absolutely everything we're doing. Whatever we go up against, we try to look at it from a very sustainable side. Even our experience centers and showrooms, we are planning to use recycled materials for those showrooms as well. So obviously, I think it's all about thinking, how are we creating a better world and a cleaner world? Because you've got to bring people with you. And I think we're sort of on a cusp of something with COVID-19 that just happened. I think what people realize is that the world and nature can actually heal really quickly. We saw it during sort of the darkest days of COVID, where there was no cars on the road and suddenly there was, you know, more blue skies, less pollution. You know, there was fish in Venice. People in Shanghai could see the blue sky for the first time. And that, for me, I think must have opened up a lot of eyes for people to realize that if we do something significant, we can actually make it happen. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are ready to participate. But obviously, a lot of people want to have some product or some entertainment, whatever it might be, that replaces the old things, and it should be better. And I think that's what we are trying to do moving forward.
Wonderful. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to getting into some of those details around the design elements of your product that's coming out. And I figured before we did that, let's make sure to get some of the stats out there. What are you building? And maybe tell us some of the numbers, like what are you aiming for in terms of range and cost, and when can I buy one?
So our first goal was to, as I started Fisker Automotive before, and you mentioned the Fisker Karma, we started with a $100,000 car, and we kind of had to, just like Tesla started with their, you know, expensive model as well, because at that time technology was very expensive. However, coming into today, my aim was to really try and bring some more affordable vehicles to the road that could reach a higher market potential, getting more people into electric vehicles. So our vehicle will start from around $40,000 going up, depending on how many options and packages you put on it. So we are sort of in that affordable premium segment. And we decided to actually start with an SUV, because this is the fastest growing segment in the world. And, if we can make an SUV sustainable and, you know, electric, I think we can convert a lot of people, because in the end of the day, people like SUVs, and we need to come up with a vehicle that people actually want to step out of that gasoline SUV and into an electric vehicle. So we decided to start with an SUV, and it's sort of a mid-sized SUV. It's got, in my mind, the way we have priced it and with all the features it has, I actually think it offers a better value than a similar gasoline vehicle. And it's interesting you talk about range. If you look back in history, every sort of decade has been about a certain item that car companies have competed about. In the 60s, you know, everybody competed about how fast from 0 to 60. Then it became, maybe in the 70s, it was the top speed. And then in the 80s, it was how aerodynamic your car was. So, and now with electrification, everybody's competing about who can make the longest range. But reality is that most of us don't really need to carry around a giant battery with a 300 or 400 mile range, because we only drive 30 to 40 miles a day maximum. So right now, people feel that they need a vehicle with 300 mile range, which we're doing. But we are toying with the idea of offering a much smaller battery as well, simply because a lot of people use their second or third car, which is electric, hopefully, mainly to drive around and do errands in the city they live. And if you think about LA, which is the biggest electric vehicle market in the world with 18 million people, you can pretty much do everything you need to do here within a easily 50 mile range. So you really don't need to carry this giant battery, because carrying a giant battery 300 mile range means actually that you're using more energy when you drive, because there's more weight in the car. And eventually, when that battery has to get out of the vehicle and recycled, it's a much bigger effort with a much bigger battery. And of course, there's the cost as well, where you're paying for something that you actually don't really need. It's just something we got used to with gasoline cars that we never thought about range, because there's a gas station every corner. But I believe in the next 2 or 3 years, we will see enough charging stations, superchargers, whatever we call them, around both Europe and US and China, that I don't think that will be an issue. And finally, about 80 to 90% of electric vehicles are actually charged at home. And that's one of the great things about owning an electric vehicle, that you end up realizing that you actually just come home every night, plug it in, and then the next day, you know, you're going wherever you have to go, mostly to work and back, or dropping the kids in school, and you just realize you never really visit a gas station. It's a great feeling, and you never really even need to go to a supercharger as well, because you probably only need that if you're going on a long trip. So I basically believe that we're going to end up in, maybe it's going to take us probably about 5 years before we reverse and people start realizing, and maybe it's when they have two cars, they realize that maybe one of my cars need 300 or 400 mile range, but the other one really only need 100 mile range because I never really go anywhere with it. And I think that's kind of, it's going to be an interesting transition once people realize that they don't have to pay for these giant batteries. Now, on top of that, we are working on some new technology with the Fisker Ocean, which is our first electric vehicle, was coming out in 2022. We are putting a giant solar roof on it. So in countries where there is a lot of sun, we are hoping eventually we can get quite a lot of energy, and which is obviously free and 100% zero emission, through the vehicle by having a solar roof. Because most vehicles, when people drive to work, are standing in a parking lot for 8 hours a day in maximum sun. And therefore, you could actually create and generate a lot of energy that you could use absolutely for free and would be zero emission. So we will be offering the world's largest solar roof on a vehicle. It obviously can't drive the vehicle only by solar power, but it can contribute, and then again, it lowers the overall emissions of the vehicle.
I love it. So cool. And Alejandro, I'm really curious about the shift from Formula E to Extreme E. Can you tell us about that? You know, what motivated you to sort of move on, and how are the platforms different?
Well, yes, they're very different. They have both the same objective, which is also the same objective as Henrik had, and you know, many other people that are pushing the electric, let's say, electrification of mobility, you know. But they're very, very different. Formula E started to promote electric cars in cities. It's a formula, so the cars are like, you know, they have open wheel and open cockpit. It's a championship that it's already 6 years old, has had a great growth, and it was really, the objective was to showcase exciting electric cars, make them more exciting, and also help with the technology. So have a platform, a kind of a laboratory where the big manufacturers or the big or small manufacturers can develop technologies for the race that then can use on their road cars. So that was Formula E. But then we thought there was room, there was a space to create something more radical, more like its own name, more extreme. To take these electric cars, in this case, different cars, SUVs, and Henrik mentioned that SUV is the fastest growing segment in the car industry. To take these electric SUVs and showcase electric SUVs in the most affected parts of the planet by climate change. And by bringing these cars there, we show that electric cars are part of the solution, but we also show other things, like you can generate energy and charge these cars on a clean way in those very remote locations, for example. And those locations are really the whole story of Extreme E. The core of Extreme E is where we're going to race. And, you know, it's going to be in the Arctic, in the Amazon rainforest, in the Himalayas, in the desert, in Saudi Arabia, in the beaches of Africa, in Senegal. And each race shows one challenge, one problem that the planet is facing or is suffering, linked to climate change or linked to pollution. For example, in Senegal, we race in a beach of Lago Oz, of the Pink Lake. There is completely full of plastic. And it's plastic that is not coming from Senegal. It's coming from Europe or from the States. So these races are going to help. What we do is we use a sport that, you know, hopefully we have a lot of fans. Formula A has a lot of fans. Formula One has a lot of fans, to send this message across of awareness about the problems that the planet is facing. So that is Extreme E, and that makes it very, very different from Formula E. But, you know, I'm involved still in both. I'm the chairman of Formula E and the CEO of Extreme E. And my day-to-day is more Extreme E, but I'm still very, very involved in Formula E.
So just a quick follow-up, because you're mentioning so much about how the fun will drive awareness, because people want to be a part of this, and it's exciting. And you're right, it's accessible, because SUVs are what everybody's driving or wanting to drive. There's also this piece about the development of the technology that I think is really interesting. And, you know, we've seen it in Formula One, where it takes a long time, but it does go from race into road vehicles. How is that different with Extreme E?
So Extreme E is going to actually, on the technology side, focus on the off-road part of the electric car technology. The core of the technology development happens in Formula E. In Formula E, we have generations of cars. Of generation one was the first car that we had in Formula E. Those cars, we needed two cars to finish the race. So the battery didn't have enough energy in it to finish the whole race, and each driver had two cars. The big evolution came 3 years later when we changed the cars, the generation two, and these cars could finish the race with only one car. So we won one battery. And yeah, of the same size and the same weight, which shows how much more energy we were able to put. The energy density grew double, more than double, from the batteries of generation one to generation two. Now we're looking at generation three, which will come in 2 years. Generation three is gonna focus on ultra fast charging, because if you can charge your car in 5 minutes, the range anxiety, Henrik was mentioning carrying around a battery that can take you 300 or 400 miles, is not that worrying anymore. It's not that necessary anymore, because you can just stop and charge and then continue and stop and charge. So we think that technology is going to be very relevant for the massive adoption of electric cars. No? So those technologies actually go very fast from the championship to the road cars, especially the software development, the control systems of the batteries, the energy management system, the efficiency of the powertrains have a very, very direct application then on road cars. So that's really how we make this platform a laboratory to improve the technology for electric cars.
Yeah, I love the idea that it is the laboratory, as you just said, you know, being able to use that to spur innovation and bring it into the markets for regular people. And Henrik, you touched on that a little bit as well when you were talking about adoption. And I think back into the adoption cycles that I've been a part of with respect to, you know, LEDs replacing conventional lighting, or even now what we're seeing with renewable electricity replacing conventional electricity. And to some degree, those early adopters are the ones that pay more and wear it as a badge of honor, but you don't really get that big flow of adoption until you're giving more than just the new, you're giving some convenience or some value or benefit. What you described is when people are ready to participate, it's really about that convenience, it sounds like. Is that how you think about it? Is it not just the cool factor or even the sustainability factor, but the convenience factor?
Yeah, I think the difficulties with electric cars and the adoption of electric cars have been that in the end of the day, you know, a car is a very big purchase or a very big acquisition for somebody. And it has been very slow, I think, because of that reason, and also just a little bit the fear of a new sort of technology. And what's interesting is when people actually get an electric car, what we have seen is most people that never really want to get out of an electric car again. And when you actually have an electric car for quite a while and you suddenly get into a gasoline car, you just realize how old-fashioned and awkward it is. You suddenly realize the bad smell when you come home in your garage, and you know the engine is heating it up, and you're getting the last smell of the gasoline in the garage, etc. You're realizing when you go to a gas station how annoying that really was. So what it really is about, I think there is always like that tipping point where everybody, maybe on at least every street in a country, is having an electric car, and suddenly people realize, wow, it's actually something that normal people buy. And of course, pricing is a big part of that. And I think the feeling have been that electric cars were overpriced and you didn't get enough for your money. I think there's a wave of electric cars coming in probably the next 2 or 3 years where they are going to be similar price to a similar gasoline vehicle in sort of the similar size and equipment and style. And there has been a lack of a choice of electric cars. That is a fact. So, you know, a lot of people, if they would look around for a certain car, wouldn't find the electric car in the segment of the type of vehicle they were looking for. So that's why we decided to do an SUV, because we realized that this is the type of vehicle people want. So let's not try and convince them that they should buy a little hatchback if they really want an SUV. And I think that's the right approach in my mind. And then I think the second point is to come up with smart new solutions that you can do with electric vehicles that you can do with gasoline vehicles to make it, like you mentioned, more convenient. So one of the things we did, we came up with what we call a flexible lease, where one of the things from all the surveys shows that people are afraid of what they think is going to be an astronomical price to replace a battery if something goes wrong. Now, what if you take that risk completely out? And the way we've done that is by saying, well, you can lease the vehicle, and it's under full warranty, no matter how long you lease. And even if you lease an old vehicle from us, it's still under full warranty. And finally, when you lease our vehicle, we do all maintenance for free. We even change the tires. We pick up the vehicle if it needs maintenance, because you know, electric vehicle has no scheduled maintenance. So we can afford to do that because we have calculated that there's so little maintenance across a fleet of vehicles that it's much easier for us to include it, and we'll pick up your car. And then finally, you can give the car back anytime. And because we have no dealers and because we do everything over a proprietary app, so we launched an app last year, when in the meantime, we have over 34,000 people on this app already, although we are 2 years away from launching the car. But that means that we have taken so much cost out of the actual sales experience that we can lower the cost of the vehicle. So our vehicle, just to give you a comparison, is in the base model, you pay $3,000 down on a lease, and then you pay $379 a month. If you go in, for instance, on the Tesla Model 3 calculator and put $3,000 down, that vehicle will cost you $523 a month. And if you go on a BMW calculator for a similar vehicle, it'll also be over $500 a month. So we have been able to take so much cost out because we're not spending money on salespeople. We're not spending money on dealerships. We have a unique service strategy where we work with suppliers of service centers or infrastructure of service centers that we don't need to build. So by taking all this cost out, we are able to offer our customers an incredible value and an incredible convenience that they would never have in a gasoline vehicle, where you never have to take your car to service. So I do believe that you've got to create a product which is better than the product people came out of. And that means the entire experience.
Yeah, I'm seeing a big picture that I would not have appreciated had you not gone into it, because what you're describing is that whole, you're building this whole set of attractions around the cost and the selling and, you know, the financing and maintenance and all of those things that people try to do to lure someone into the future of a new paradigm. But it seems like you're going to meet them where they are, which is the SUV platform. So it's a nice, interesting balance of that attraction, but also going to the point where people are ready to participate.
Well, and you know, just the last point, one of the things that kind of came out of COVID was obviously that people now are much more comfortable doing everything digitally. I mean, I have to be honest, I had never thought I would buy a pair of shoes on Amazon, you know, before COVID, but now because I needed some new running shoes, I did it because the shops were closed and it was very easy. And I think a lot of people have had that experience. And when we launched our app end of last year, which were way before COVID, we weren't quite sure how attractive this was going to be because, you know, again, it's a big purchase, but we have had an incredible feedback, positive feedback. And I think people in the future will be very comfortable ordering a vehicle directly on an app or from our website and get it delivered at home. And when they need service, they just click on the app and we'll come and pick up the car. With a digital key, you don't even have to go. You don't have to go and deliver the car. You can leave it at the parking lot in your work environment or wherever you are, and drop us a pin. We'll pick up the car. We'll give it back clean and washed. You won't even spend 1 minute taking your car to service. And taking the car to service is something people hate because they usually miss their job in the beginning in the morning. They have to sign papers to get a loaner car. They got to bring back the loaner car. You know, all that hassle is out the window. So there is a lot of amazing new things we can do when it comes to electric cars.
Cool.
So one of the things I find really interesting about both of you, Henrik and Alejandro, is that both of you are focused on SUVs. And Henrik, you know, you've explained really well why that's the case for you, and it makes complete sense. Alejandro, we don't usually think of racing and SUVs as being one and the same. What's your motivation there to focus on SUVs?
Well, my motivation really comes from the fact that we have to go to those locations. So first is the choice of the locations, and then the choice of the car is a consequence. The SUV is the only car that can really race on those really remote locations that are, you know, basically the end of the world. It's also a way to show that electric cars can deliver performance in ice, in sand, in rocks, in any kind of surface. So it was first to choose the locations, which, like I would say, is the core of our story. And then the SUV is the logic car to race there. And it's very important because, like Henry was saying, it's the fastest growing segment. And there are going to be elements of the technology that we can develop off-road for electric cars, specific the traction, the way the motors operate in the SUVs, you know, on very, very competitive situations and so on, that then can be used for road cars now. So that's why we also went for an SUV.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And now it seems so obvious when you share that. I guess the other thing that I'd really love to hear your perspective on is you guys have obviously live and breathe electric vehicles, and we're talking about, you've already sort of touched on some of the elements that make them superior in terms of the smell and that kind of thing. For those of us who have never been in an electric vehicle or driven one, what are we looking forward to? What are that we will experience that we never anticipated? And I almost think of how before the iPhone existed, we had these flip phones that, you know, and we lived with them and it was great. And then and we had no idea we needed an iPhone until it arrived.
Yeah.
What can we look forward to in terms of electric vehicles on that front?
You know, one of the things that car companies have tried to perfect for the last probably 100 years has been two things. One is to make the gear shift as smooth as possible. And even as we went into automatic transmissions, the whole idea was to try to make the vehicle so smooth that you would barely feel the gear shift. The second part was specifically on more luxurious cars. The idea was to try and make the engine in the car as smooth and quiet. So think about a Rolls Royce, costs $400,000. The whole idea is to try and make this V12 with as little vibration and as smooth as possible, and the gear shift as smooth as possible. Now you think about the cheapest electric car you can buy, or any electric car you're going to go into in the future, it is going to be more quiet and it's going to be more smooth than a Rolls Royce. And that's the exceptional thing of an electric car, that you get an electric car and you suddenly realize there is no vibration from the engine, it's totally quiet, and there is zero feeling of any gear shift. You just have instant acceleration all the way up, let's say the speed limit or however fast you want to go. And when you then start driving this electric car, specifically in traffic, and I would say that's really where you feel a huge advantage with electric car, you have instant torque. So when you need to change lane or when you suddenly need to move, you don't have this lag that you have with all gasoline cars. You don't have to worry about it. You know, you're just instantly moving. And once you start using an electric car, you realize how amazing it is. And the comparison to the iPhone was really a good point, where you're swiping things are moving fast. And it is the same thing with electric car. And what's interesting for me in electric vehicles, and why it's going to be very exciting when we get more affordable electric vehicles out, is that the power and the feeling of torque doesn't diminish in the same way that it does with a gasoline car as we go to smaller and smaller engines. So when you get a very small engine in a gasoline car, a very cheap car, you get into it and you drive it, it just really feels cheap. It really feels like I'm going nowhere. I can barely get up the hill. Whereas electric cars, even as they're fairly small, they still feel that they're powerful. There's enough power in them. So any electric car you're going to get into is going to inherently feel a lot more smooth, a lot faster than any gasoline car in the same segment. And I think that's the most amazing part of the experience. And most of us today are doing phone calls and other things in the vehicle. And the fact that it then is completely quiet and you don't have any jerky movement when you shift gear is going to just, it fits perfectly in our lifetime right now and what we're doing in our daily life.
So Alejandro, you were starting to say something there too. Is there anything else in terms of what you think we should see coming? Or?
Well, yes. Henrik alluded at it before, not in this intervention, the one before, but you obviously forget about going to the gas station. And that's a very, very big change because, you know, we're used to, when you have a combustion car, you're used to refuel obviously every time. An electric car, especially if you charge in your home and you have a charging in your where you work, you basically forget about the gas station. And that's a massive kind of gain also from electric cars. It's just great. It's once you go to an electric car, I think there is really no way back. So once you experience it and you have one, you realize that that is really practical for you, then there's no way back.
Yeah, it's funny that you say practical, because the way I think about Extreme E is that you're taking vehicles and putting them in some of the most impractical situations in the world, in yes. extremely yes. different environments, requiring them to get energy from green sources with very different local, resources. How tough is that going to be to manage? I mean, going around the world, basing your headquarters off a ship, you're really focused on the whole yeah. carbon emissions view.
So obviously electric cars are, I call electric cars the solution for the downstream, but you need also a solution for the upstream. That's what GE, renewable energy does, like make renewable energies more affordable and more efficient. The energy needs to be generated in a clean way. If we generate, and you said in the beginning of the podcast, if you take electricity from coal, then your emissions are almost the same as if you were using combustion car. So with that in mind, everything around Extreme E has to be focused on reducing the carbon footprint. First, we have a ship. By having a ship, instead of flying the cars around the world, we reduce already by 2/3 the carbon emissions of the operation, of the logistic operation. Of course, the ship is not electric. We wish it was, but electric ships still are not there. I mean, there are some in development, but they're not ships of that size are not yet operational. But we are going to put a big sign on the side of the ship saying not electric yet. So we have the ambition one day to make the ship electric, but we're going to make it as green as it can be. Then what's very important is to generate the energy that we're going to charge the cars with from renewable sources. We are going to do that with hydrogen fuel cell. But it's very important that the hydrogen, because hydrogen is a tricky source of energy. It's not really a source of energy. It's a storage. It's a way to store energy, hydrogen. You basically use energy to make the hydrogen, and then you get the energy from the hydrogen. But if you use the wrong energy to manufacture the hydrogen, you have an impact which is 8 times higher than the amount of energy that you manage to store and then use. So the hydrogen needs to be generated also with renewable energy. That's a challenge, but that's what we are going to do also as we go around the world on the ship and on the places where we're going to race. So the full cycle is going to be carbon neutral for the generation of the energy for the cars, which is a key and essential part of the message. It's a huge challenge logistically, and we need a ship, we need all these infrastructures, but it's at the end the whole goal to demonstrate that it's possible to do that.
And you started, if I get this correctly, it seems like you started with your own car and then started to bring in other manufacturers into the series. And I thought it was really interesting how you also see it as a test bed for these manufacturers. Maybe can you describe some of that?
Yes, absolutely. So the manufacturers are in Formula E. So the Extreme E is still we're signing up the teams that are going to race on the first season, which starts next year. But Formula E has been racing 6 years. In the beginning, we had our own car that we gave to all the teams, and everybody had the same car. But then we opened the technology on season 2, and the manufacturers started to come. In the beginning, they were independent teams, private teams from racing lovers, and but then the big car manufacturers started coming. Companies very well known like BMW or like Audi, like Nissan, Mercedes, like Porsche, Mahindra. I mean, many, many, many car manufacturers came on board, and they used the championship for two things. First, for a marketing tool for their electric cars. So they showcased Mercedes, for example, the EQ cars. They showcased, they used the Formula E to do the marketing for those cars. But then to develop a specific technology that then they can introduce in their own cars. So that's how the manufacturers slowly started coming into Formula E. And now Formula E is the championship with more manufacturers in the world, basically. So Formula One has 4 manufacturers, Formula E has 9 manufacturers. So that shows that the platform, it's a valid platform for the manufacturers to do this test of the technology that then they can introduce on the road cars.
And I think that's super interesting. And, have you gotten to a point, I know the racing series doesn't start until next year. Have you gotten to a point where you've already seen some innovation come out through the series so far?
So we have with the prototypes that we are doing. So these cars have a very sophisticated transmission for the 4-wheel drive, the position of the engines. It's all very, very innovative, but it's our IP. So the Extreme E company, because we are the ones supplying the cars to all the teams in a similar way like we did with Formula E. So everybody races with the same car. And then on season 2 or 3, we will open the window for them to develop their own engine and maybe some other parts so they can develop their own technology. And then that will open the door for car manufacturers to come into the membership.
So we're hearing a lot about how to make something in a sustainable way. You talked about these manufacturers. Henrik, you talked about the world's most sustainable vehicle. And I love that you also said the world's most emotional and sustainable vehicle. I wonder if maybe you think they're linked in some way. But when we think about material use, especially in a circular economy, there is some kind of a phase where it feels more expensive to get there. There is obviously a value for using recycled materials if it's lower cost, but it's perceived that comes with lower quality sometimes. How do you get past, or how do you decide on choices that you're making in the design and the manufacturing of the vehicle itself?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, it's about redefining what we think luxury is. And I think it's already happened a little bit in the world of fashion, where 20, 30 years ago, it was luxury to have a big, you know, mink coat and so on. And now it's moving in a completely different direction. Same with handbags that suddenly are becoming vegan, et cetera. I think that as a designer, it's kind of my job to figure out what is the future in terms of luxury and design and everything else. So you can create patterns and haptic feels and materials that are really exciting and interesting and different and gives you a luxury feel, even though that material may be a recycled material versus what we traditionally think as maybe a piece of leather or an expensive piece of plastic, really, which we have spent, you know, many decades of making soft and, you know, giving a certain patterns that looks like leather, like most dashboards are made, or carpets, for instance. So with that carpet, we went all out on the carpets on the Fisker Ocean, where all the carpets are made of recycled plastic bottles and fishing nets, et cetera, from the ocean. And, you know, if you think about a carpet in a car, I mean, how often are you, it's not like a home carpet where you're walking around barefoot. So that carpet, I think, is a great place to start, because in a car, it's, you know, it's less of an area where you actually touch or even see or feel it. And even if it might be slightly rougher, it's really not an issue. We have seen that the pricing is only a fractional higher right now, but it's really not that much. Of course, we have to go through with our supplier durability testing and all these other things to make it automotive grade. All that's already been done. And then there's other areas of vehicle, for instance, where we use what we now call vegan leather. And of course, it is a type of material that is made from, again, recycled materials. We're also looking at a sort of a suede type of material that's actually made from recycled old T-shirts, etc. So there's a lot of interesting materials that we have put into the vehicle, but it's all about how you actually apply these materials, what type of print or texture you make on these materials to make them interesting and exciting. If I wouldn't have told you or anybody else that this was recycled, most people probably wouldn't even have thought about it, because it's not like it looks like recycled materials. There's no visual evidence that this is recycled. So I think that's the technology today, that we can make these things happen, actually makes it possible for us to do it. And that's only part of it. The second part is also looking into even how, for instance, parts are made. Then that goes way back in the manufacturing process, and even how certain parts are assembled. So for instance, are you using a resin or a glue versus a different way of putting these materials together? So there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the car that is not visible. We are only at the very tip of the iceberg, and we want to keep improving this as we go forward. And that's why we have such a strong mission about making the world's most sustainable vehicles. Because for us, it's not something that is actually achievable. It wouldn't be achievable today to make, for instance, a car out of fully recyclable materials. It's just not possible. But there's so much improvement you can do over the next 10 years. And I think that's kind of the exciting part of it.
Henrik, your passion, and not only the insights, but your passion around this is so exhilarating, because it really makes me feel like it's possible, you know, that we are at the tip of the iceberg. We don't have to suffer to be green. It's great to hear. And Alejandro, just to think about sustainability in another angle, one way we think about sustainability is through materials, as we're just talking, and about energy and how that cycles. But there's also, you know, sustainability with respect to using our human capital really well. And you guys are doing something extremely interesting to, especially Sheila and I, as two women in the energy sector. You know, we love hearing about work that is being done to drive more equity in spaces that we don't have today. So can you tell us just a little bit more about what you are doing with your platform that not only drives this view around sustainability from an environment perspective, but also that human side?
Yes, one of our main focus is equality. We've been, I have been for many, many years on the motorsport world. And it's a world where mainly it's all men, basically. And I've been trying personally. I used to have a team 15 years ago where Formula 3 team in Spain that I set up at the time for women. And I had two female drivers in the team, but it didn't get traction. Sponsors didn't follow. It really didn't succeed. So since then I was thinking how to make a formula that will allow women and men to compete in equal level, right? Because the problem is if the woman is not at the equal level, it's competing, it's always in the back, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to generate even more inequality. So we came up by watching tennis, the mixed doubles, we came up with this system where every race, two long laps, about, you know, maybe 5 or 6 miles, each one is driven by one of the team members. One is a man, one is a woman. So they're all equally decisive for victory. And the teams can decide in their strategy if they want to play first the woman or the man. So there will be men and women fighting each other, and then they will get off the car, and then the other member of the team will jump in and continue. So that really is an innovation because it's never been done before in motorsport. But I think it's going to be one of the strongest points of this new championship because, you know, it's extreme in the locations, but it's also extreme in its format that is very, very new and that really places win. It's like tennis in double mix. If the man misses the point, they lose the game. If the woman misses the point, they lose the game. Here, if the female driver makes a mistake, they will lose the race. If the male makes a mistake, they will lose the race. So they're both equally decisive, and that's what we're looking. So you know, we're really, really excited by that. When we announced it, it got very, very good reception by the people.
I wish you could see the smile on my face. I just think it's so cool and so forward-looking, and it's just really exciting to hear, you know, the emphasis on the equality side of it too. This was a really fun conversation, and I feel like my mind just got bigger. I feel like we have so much to look forward to, even though our carpets in our car will be made from ocean materials, and you know, we're not going to be going to gas stations anymore. It's really, thinking about that future is really exciting. Before we wrap up, I mean, any other thoughts you might want to share with our listeners?
I think it was a great conversation generally, and I think it's all about getting awareness out. And maybe the final thought I would put in, you know, being in the car world, I think it's interesting to see how even the traditional car companies now are reaching out to startup EV makers to actually collaborate, to work together, to move electrification forward. So I think we're going to see an incredible acceleration of the exciting electric vehicles over the next already 2 and 3 years.
Oh my God, just to like last thought is like, you know, Henrik mentioned it, but we've been lucky because we love sport, we love races, we love car racing, and we are able to do something that is making contribution to, you know, to improve the environment, the pollution in the cities and so on, with something that we love. And I think everyone from its own activity can make that contribution. Henrik mentioned it at the beginning, I want to do it at the end. Everyone can play a role, big or small, and you know, everyone has almost the duty, I would say, to play a role, because this is a challenge that, you know, the climate change and the climate crisis that we have is a challenge that we really need to tackle seriously. So you know, everyone can make a contribution. That's kind of my last thought.
Yeah, I'll recap just a little bit by saying the thing I loved hearing about today was, you know, this is something everyone has to be a part of, but you guys are making it easy for us. You know, you're redefining luxury so that it feels good. You're making it comfortable. You're putting it in a car we want to drive, coming to our platforms that we care about. It's really inspiring to think that this momentum is behind the change, because change is hard. One other point that I think was a good theme here was that we heard COVID a couple times come up. It's helped us embrace that change a little bit more, because progress requires it, and we can move forward together when we have to, but also when we want to. So this was great. And I think from a perspective where Sheila and I's world intersect here is we're finding the same challenges and opportunities with convenience and benefits, but also meeting people where they are and working in the system that we have today with the markets, the whole ecosystem, the markets, the products, the capabilities, the challenges, all in a world that's changing really fast.
Yeah. So, you know, Danielle and I come from the power generation space, and I think it also kind of, this conversation highlights why it's so important to have these sort of collaborative types of discussions, because, you know, it really is about bringing everything you're doing together with everything we're doing. And the more we're connected and we understand how things are moving forward, hopefully the quicker we can get that carbon out of the system. So thank you both, Henrik and Alejandro, for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah. And for our audience, thank you so much for listening. You know, we really love to hear your feedback as we continue to evolve this podcast series. So please check out our website at geenergyconsulting.com. And until then, thank you for listening and see you next time.
We really hope you enjoyed today's episode on the evolution and role electric vehicles are playing in addressing climate change and decarbonization. Again, this episode was brought to you by the team at GE Energy Consulting. To access and listen to this episode and other industry case studies and resources, feel free to visit our website at geenergyconsulting.com. And see you next time.